Good afternoon, folks, or evening, depending upon where you live. This is Carolyn Evers, and you know I just love being here sharing with you. And guess who's with me? Richard?
Who's with you, Carolyn? Anyone I know?
Well, I'm welcoming you back. You know, we have a lot of fun together on this show.
Indeed.
And for our listeners out there, I would say that we've got a bang-up show tonight. If you loved Elvis last week, you're going to really love Elvis this week, because he said he wanted to come back, talk all about vibration. You know, he's really enjoying it on the other side and what he's doing now. And he brought along Julius Caesar with him. And the reason he brought along Julius Caesar, the two of them have become friends on the other side. And Caesar took Elvis to the center of the cosmos and showed him what creation is like. In other words, all there is in the center of the cosmos, and he has a view of what his entire creation looks like. And so Caesar took Elvis and showed him, and I guess you might say pointed out the seams and the sights. Well, I want to know about this. I don't know about you. I hope you're listening, because I think you'd want to know about this too. So what do you think, Richard? Sounds like a good lineup.
It does. It does. I shall be most interested to hear what they've got to say.
You want to sit back and listen, huh?
I'd like to.
Oh, Elvis is really anxious to get started. So, Elvis, do you have everything in order as to what you want to talk about? He's telling me yes. So, I understand, Elvis, you wanted to talk about vibration. And it's something we all want to know about. So give us your input. You know, you've been over on the other side for a while, and you've had a lot of opportunities to work with grandmasters on the other side. I know you guys go to classes to learn. You also view things from your own perspective. There's a lot of teachers there that you come in rubbing elbows with. So, Elvis, what have you got to tell us about vibration?
And he is saying, vibration is the heart of everything which exists within creation. And so once you understand this, it becomes quite a fascinating journey. Indeed, you begin to understand where music fits in. Some of you perhaps have heard of the music of the spheres, the music of creation, because at the heart of all creation is indeed music. The use of sound is a fundamental element of creation. And all that exists within the cosmos is made up of vibration. Matter, as you see it, is simply a form of vibration. And all things which exist within the cosmos are connected by vibration. Indeed, the cherubim angels carry vibrational information all over the cosmos and take returned messages back to the Akashic records in the center of the cosmos and back to all there is. They are, you could say, the telephone wires of the cosmos. That's a funny idea. They carry vibration throughout the cosmos. And when you start to understand this vibrational nature of everything and how music fits in, then you can begin to consider how music can be used to encourage the development of the soul, to soothe the soul, to open up possibilities within the soul. Music can be used in this way. And so my interest in vibration is very much connected to music, because even beyond my life as Elvis, music has been part of me for a very long time and continues to be. So perhaps that is a starter for you.
Well, I love it, Elvis. I really do. And my understanding of vibration with music is there's a lot more attached to that. Numbers, for instance, numerology, and so many other things. How about giving us a little viewpoint besides music as to the other facets of vibration as we understand it here in this dimension?
Everything which exists, as I said, consists of vibration of some form. And you have heard, or many of you have heard of, the fall in Atlantis. And the essence of that fall was a change in vibration of the human physical body. There were other things that were done also, but a key aspect of that shift was a change in vibration, and as a result of the change in vibration, the nature of matter changed. Matter became much denser on Earth and within Earth than it was prior to the fall. And so there is this fundamental connection between vibrational level, you could say, and the expression of things in the physical. And as humanity, at least those of humanity that choose to participate in ascension, as humanity passes through that ascension event, the vibration of all matter, you could say, on the planet and within the human physical body will increase. You will increase to the vibrational level of the angelic dimension. And so I mention this because vibration is at the heart of everything. Everything is made of vibration. Indeed, the history of everything is recorded in vibration. So it is just such a fundamental part of everything.
Thank you, Elvis. I have on occasion heard the music of the spheres, and I was very high in the mountains. One place was in the Alps mountains, and I heard the music of the spheres, which is quite fascinating to be able to hear this. Can you give us a little insight as to how the music of the spheres operate? Is there such a thing? Can you give us such a thought as to how the structure of the cosmos has been worked through vibration?
It is not something that I completely understand as yet. However, I am aware that vibration is husbanded, you could say, throughout the cosmos. That there is, in one sense, vibration, and there is the energy that is associated with that vibration. And so when one looks at creation, there is this husbanding of energy using vibration to shape matter, might be the way to look at it. And this is done using sacred geometry. The shapes that are expressed in sacred geometry lie at the very basis of creation. The use of energy, of sacred geometry and vibration together are what is responsible for all that you see. It is not immediately obvious how this works, but when you begin to examine it, it is amazing how, in a sense, simple it all is. It is just the reworking of a small number of elements in different ways. And some of your scientists have begun to understand how sacred geometry is at the heart of all creation. So there are these threads. And when one talks of the music of the spheres, It is the essential vibration of creation. It is the essential vibration, the essential music that is carried throughout the cosmos and used as the basis to bring forth creation. That is the best way I could express it to you. I do not understand it in more detail than what I have shared.
Well, that is a beautiful explanation, Elvis, and I suspect from what you're saying that the music of the spheres probably runs throughout the cosmos, joining other constellations and planetary arrangements. Am I on the right track with that, or perhaps you're not aware of this yet?
What you are saying is how I understand it, and as I said, I am still learning about this, but this is what you have expressed is how I understand it to be.
That's beautiful. Now, we have someone that you brought, Julius Caesar, and of course, I love Caesar. For those of you who might be aware of my past, I was his daughter, Julia, when he was on Earth, and so you might say we go back a bit. So tell me, how did you come to make this arrangement with Caesar? You might say a working relationship with him. Tell us a little about how you met him and how he is sharing some things with you that he's aware of. Can you do that?
Yes. I connected with Caesar through working on your project, you could say. I became interested in what you were doing, as you know, and Caesar, as you are also aware, was working on this project, and so we became acquainted through this common interest, and it was through this common interest and understanding that we were both cherubim angels that led us to begin to look at this and to begin to work together.
I love it. Now, when you were on Earth, I suspect that you didn't remember that you were a cherubim angel, do you? Or did you?
I had no idea.
And so when you crossed over to the other side, how did you find out that you were a cherubim angel?
I began to examine my past, my history, my connections. I began to examine the nature of my soul, and so I began to understand. As you understand, once you cross over, you once more have access to your memories. And so I was able to trace this back and understand those aspects of who and what I was. And it helped me understand my interest in music, because the cherubim are the masters of vibration.
Well, what a fascinating story, Elvis, truly. Now, I don't know if you have looked this up in your records yet, but being a cherubim, you were in, and Caesar would have been in, the center of the cosmos with Prime Creator. Did you check your records to find out either why you came to Earth or when you came to Earth, or did you stop at other places first before you came to Earth? Did you go that far in checking your records?
I have not completely examined my records, because there are so many things of interest here that I have been involved in wanting to understand. But I have examined my records enough to understand who I am, and also to understand that I have traveled to many other areas of the cosmos. I have taken form, at least my monad, if you will, has expressed itself in form in other planetary systems, and so, like so many others upon Earth, I have traveled widely. I have come to understand that most that are incarnated on Earth at this time, indeed throughout the history of the planet, are beings that have travelled very widely in the cosmos. This is not the first stop by any means for most. And so you could say most of Earth are perhaps best known as voyagers, those who have travelled widely and experienced widely.
What an exciting story, Elvis. I really do appreciate you sharing this with us. And as I understand it, Caesar had been to the center of the cosmos before the two of you, you might say, worked on your common project together. So he took you to the center of the cosmos to see creation as Prime Creator sees it. Now, did you want to add anything to this or discuss it, or did you want to turn it over to Caesar? Where do you want to go from here?
I would prefer Caesar to come forth and share that information, because I was simply there as his guest.
Thank you, Elvis. And hopefully you'll allow us to come back and chat with you some more, huh?
I'll be here.
Good. And so now we're going to place our direction towards Caesar, and we welcome you, dear friend.
Yes, he's here. And he says, thank you. It is my pleasure to join you on this call.
So, can you give us a little background? Well, first of all, this story between you and your journey and the reason that you came to Rome when you did is in the book Conversations with Caesar. And where do you want to start in that story? After you were released from the Bardo or before? Where did you want to give some of your thoughts or bring some of your thoughts forth?
I would firstly like to mention to those listening that the story in Conversations with Caesar, as I gave it to Carolyn and as others contributed to that book, that is a great perspective on my life and life within Rome at that time that is not in general available from the historians. There is quite a deal that I share in there which history has not understood. And also it contains my perspective on my journey, why I came to Earth at that time, what my mission was, how I lost sight of my mission and became, you could say, overtaken by the dark. I was encouraged to pursue power and money at the expense of my mission, and indeed destroyed my mission. And so I share all of that story, and I will not repeat it here. And so I will mention that when a soul, if indeed a soul, severely fails, I guess you could say, on an important mission, that they enter an area known as the Bardo, and that is kind of like, it's almost in a sense like a jail, and another soul needs to release you. It is a little like the story of the I can't think of the name of the book. The story of the prince who was an ugly beast who needed the princess to come and the maiden to come and fall in love with him to release him.
Oh, Sleeping Beauty.
No, it's not Sleeping Beauty actually. I've forgotten the story. Oh dear. It's a little like that. Someone needs to come and release you. And I have to say it was Carolyn, as she connected with the story, as I shared it with her, that she realized that I was in great penance, you could say, for what I had done. I understood it, and she reconnected with me and was able to have me released. And so it is with great joy that I now support the work that she and Richard are doing, and it gives me great pleasure to do this. And so I have, since that time, reconnected with my wife of that lifetime, and we travel the cosmos together. It is something we do with great joy. It is something we have done over many lifetimes. And it took me some time after I crossed over to understand that connection. I just knew in that lifetime that I was drawn to her, but I did not understand why until after that lifetime was over. And so we share a great connection, a great love, and travel the cosmos together. It is a journey of great joy now for me.
That's beautiful. And you might say she awakened you to what is in the cosmos and decided to take you to the center of the cosmos. Is that an accurate way of stating it?
Well, we chose to do that together. It was a common choice to travel together, and so we did. We have that ability because of who and what we are, the vibrational levels that we carry, and so we are able to travel in that way.
Mm-hmm. And can you give our audience a perspective of what it looks like in the center of the cosmos? Because that would be the picture that Prime Creator would have of their creation. So if you would be kind enough, just take us there for a moment and give us a snapshot view of what it would look like in the center of all creation.
Something to consider as I answer this question is that outside of your planet, everything exists in what you would call the now. That is, past, present, and future all exist. That is not to say that the future has yet happened, but the possibilities can be examined and the paths of possibility can be traveled down to understand them. And all of the past exists and can be examined and experienced. And so when you travel to the center of the cosmos, it's possible to view the time when souls were being created, for example, because that in a sense continues to exist, even though much time, as you would call it, has transpired since that time. And so when I traveled to the center of the cosmos, something I wanted to witness was indeed the creation of souls. It was truly an extraordinary event, an extraordinary view. The use of sound and color and vibration all used together to create souls and the particles of all there is. To watch this process was truly quite extraordinary. And moving to a more current time, you could say, to look out upon the cosmos, in many ways, it is a little like how you would view a photograph from the Hubble telescope. You're able to see all of the galaxies. However, what is possible where all there is located is that, in a sense, he can bring particular areas of the cosmos into focus. So it's like, even though he is unable to travel there because of the totality of who and what he is unable to move from where he is located. In a sense, he can peer down into, for example, a particular galaxy or even down into a planetary sphere and view it closely. And so when you travel to the center of the cosmos, that possibility is there. And so there is this much broader perspective of experience, you could say, which is very different from what it means to be a human being. You live in this linear time experience, this linear focused experience, which develops particular skills. You have problem-solving skills, which are the envy of all within creation, and they are to a large degree the result of this very singular focus that you have in your experience. But when you stand in the center of the cosmos, the breadth of experience is completely the opposite. Rather than this singular focus, there is this totality of experience, and hence it is more challenging to focus on a particular issue or item. It's also worth noting that there is the ability, once you step out of your linear consciousness, to be able to, you could say, experience many strands of consciousness, perhaps at the one time. And so the experience is a very different one from your linear experience. However, it was a time of great wonder to make that journey.
That's very exciting, Caesar. And something that you mentioned about how Prime Creator, all there is, could, you might say, hone in on a particular area. Let's just use the example of Earth, for instance. And Prime Creator wish to take a closer view of what's going on this planet. How aware could he be from his own viewpoint? Because I know that he uses other things such as records. It's one of the reasons why the cherubim work with the messages that they take back to him. But I'm trying to get some picture as to how close he could come through his own vantage point of viewing the Earth and what happens here. What would you say to that?
He has the ability to connect very closely to, for example, the experience on Earth. Indeed, he is able to communicate concurrently with all souls anywhere in creation. It is hard to imagine that, but indeed that is possible. And so if a number of members of humanity, perhaps is the way to express it, connect with him, they draw his attention to what is happening upon the planet. And he is very focused on what is happening on your planet at this time because of the ascension process which is being planned for, which is being prepared for. It is, as you are aware, entering a critical phase, and so it has great focus from him. And he is able to look down and indeed send specific energies forth which travel to your planet via your sun. He is able to send specific energies to the planet, and indeed is doing that continuously via the various gateways of the full moons, the solstices, the equinoxes, and so on. And so he is able to bring quite specific focus, quite specific awareness to something as seemingly small as your planet or indeed an individual soul. It is hard to imagine the consciousness of that being.
Caesar, I have to tell you that your description of all this is truly exciting and enlightening, because it's not the sort of thing that we can get elsewhere. We have a caller, Jessica from Pittsburgh, is on line one. Let's see what Jessica has to say. Who did you want to speak to, Jessica?
I was thinking either Elvis or Caesar, whoever wanted to answer.
What's your question?
Did they have any comment about chemicals and their vibration on Earth? It kind of seems like, you know, there's some sort of chemical wars going on. And, you know, in my mind, those elements have to have come from the Earth, but yet they seem so unnatural in some ways. And does that have anything to do with vibration and what's going on there?
Well, I will be glad to put the question out to him, Jessica, but I want to understand the question a little bit. You're talking about wars, well, as I'm understanding what you say, a war between chemicals. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Just like the toxic chemicals that, you know, seem to be adverse to nature, but yet they must have come from the earth, you know, originally, and it seems like humanity is perhaps misusing those chemicals, and how does that fit in with the vibrations that they're talking about?
Let me see if I understand. I have to understand the question so I can pass it along. You're talking about chemicals here on Earth that are toxic.
Yeah.
And I think your question is related to the vibration of these toxic chemicals. And is your question, do they have the same vibrational rate as chemicals that are not toxic? Is that where you're coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to understand how they fit in, because they would have come from the Earth in order to be here, I guess. But yet they seem out of place in a lot of situations here, and I'm just kind of trying to understand that picture.
Okay, well, we'll pass the question along, but what I suspect is at work here is that the chemicals that are toxic are the ones that humanity has interfered with. It seems to me that what is natural coming from the earth isn't usually toxic. But let's see what our two guests have to say. Who wants to field that question, Richard?
It's Caesar, and he is saying it's important to recognize that toxic chemicals, even though the elements that make them up come from the earth, their structure is the product of the work of humanity. And so the vibration is created, you could say the vibration of the chemical is created by the creation of the chemical itself. And so the vibration of the toxic compound, if you will, is not a vibration that existed in the elements from which it is made. And so the elements come from the earth, but the vibration of the toxic chemical does not in and of itself come forth from the earth. And indeed it does carry a different vibration, and if you allow yourself to contemplate a toxic chemical and allow yourself even to feel the idea of a toxic chemical, you can feel the vibration of it within your body. And that is, in truth, the nature of the vibration of toxic chemicals. They are very damaging, not only in their physical action, but indeed they are very damaging from a vibrational perspective. And as you move through the preparation for ascension and beyond, all of those, you could say, vibrationally out of line chemicals will be destroyed. They will cease to be able to exist upon the planet. And you may be aware that as you transition through to the new earth, as it is called, that the outcome of this will be a pristine planet. So yes, there have been many things that have been foisted upon your beautiful planet, but all of that will be left behind by the processes that are coming forth between now and, you could say, the early 2013.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, quite a complete answer, Jessica. Thank you. We now have Greg from Florida is on line two. And what question do you have, Greg?
Well, I'm astounded to be heard. And thank you very much. And I'm feeling the vibration through my computer and my phone. This is tough. My dad had an operation a couple days ago, and he currently is in a state of unresponsiveness in the hospital. And I'm not sure if you guys can respond, Caesar or Elvis or anyone in this regard. I'm sending out my message of
You're asking for help?
If he were not able to make it physically at this point, how would I be able to help him ascend? And it's been my goal for a while now to keep him viable on our planet so he would be able to ascend in 2013. That's my question.
It's a good question, and certainly a question that is full of emotion for your dad. We're going to turn it over and see who wants to answer this, Caesar or Elvis? Richard?
Yes, let me see. It's Elvis who wants to answer this.
Thank you, Elvis.
And he is saying, whilst I understand your concern for your father and your desire to have him participate in the ascension process, in truth, like every soul upon your planet, he will make his own choice. And if he crosses over beforehand, that will have been his choice, and it is important that you honor that choice. And if he does indeed remain with you and pass through the ascension process, then that too will be his choice. And I honor your desire, as I said, to see him participate in the ascension process, and I encourage you to continue to pray on his behalf, as I'm sure you do, in whatever way that is expressed for you. And indeed, I would see what you are doing right now as a form of prayer. And as I say, the key issue is to acknowledge his right to choose his own path. And if he, as I say, crosses over now, then you know what his choice has been.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elvis. And while we're talking, Greg, what is your sense of the situation? What do you think your dad's going to do?
Very good question. He's always expressed to me, and he's gone through a very trying lifetime, and he's always said to me that I do not want to live incapacitated. I want to live fully. And so, no, I think that's his choice.
Well, you're probably aware of this, Greg, because you seem like a very sensitive human being. And I'm assuming that your dad is in a coma, correct?
They call it unresponsive at the moment, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
When I rubbed his foot today, I got him to open his eyes, but he did not focus on me.
Right. When they are in that situation, you know, you probably realize that they are in a place where they can review the possibilities. Has that occurred to you?
It occurred to me, but I wasn't sure.
I have a dear friend who was in a coma, and she finally decided to pass over. And this is what she tells me, that when she was in that what would be considered a coma state, when they are unresponsive, the soul can actually leave. The body's still alive, but the soul can actually leave and go explore what the other choice is. So let's say for a moment, your dad understands on a soul level what the physical situation is, and he is presented with choices, and it is possible. I'm not saying that your dad's doing this. I'm just saying that it is possible that what they do is momentarily leave and explore what the possibilities are. In other words, they're gathering information to make a choice. Does that make sense to you?
100% yes.
Yes.
He has that ability. If there's anybody that does, it's him.
Yeah. And I would also like to say that your dad is well aware that you were there. And I would venture to say that your dad understands your love for him. And I'm sure the fact that you were there and on some level your soul's communicating with his soul, you are giving him strength.
With that being said, it's a quandary going forward to what strength I give. Do I bring him back in a state that is different than what he would desire to be in? In other words, a neurologist said today that he won't be the same person if he does come back. So do I?
I don't think you. I don't think you do anything. I think you should listen to what Elvis said. That Dad will make the choice. All you need to do is, in my humble opinion, is to be there in love and service, and just let him know that whatever choice he makes, you accept this. I don't think it's our place to try and change people's souls' minds or, you know, put our input into it. Be there for him. Tell him you love him. And whatever choice he makes, you are with him. I suspect that if he does cross over...
You're 100% correct there.
Yeah.
If
your dad crosses over, he's going to connect with you. And you will have beautiful discussions together. So, Greg, my dear, this is a difficult time for you. And just be there. Let him know that you love him. You can hold his hand either mentally or, you know, physically. And
I give.
Yeah, I know. And blessings to you, Greg. I know that this is a hard time for you. But know that whatever choice your father makes, he will be back to contact you. And some of these connections that we have experienced with, you know, bringing people together from this side of the veil and the other side of the veil, this is quite exciting to, just like we're having a conversation with Caesar and Elvis, if your dad does pass over,
he'll
tell you all
this.
Very
exciting. And thank you, Caesar. Thank you, Elvis. My God, just to be able to connect. And Carolyn, thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thank Richard,
really,
for making it all possible.
I feel lighter. Yep, no, I, and, you know, it's not a time to laugh, but yet I laugh.
And indeed, because, you know, life is such that there is a joy to living. Whatever, you know, part of the passage that you were working through, it's a joy. And one does need to laugh. And as I tell people who are grieving, you know, when you lose someone, there is great grief. They're not in your daily life. But the time comes when you'll be able to remember the joys without remembering the sadness. And that's the beautiful part of it. Because your dad, I'm sure, gave you a great legacy in what he passed to you, for you to be such a loving son. And that part will be with you always. And if he does cross over, you'll be able to connect with him. And
thank
bless
you for
you,
saying.
Greg.
I, you know what? I have a question for Caesar.
All right. What is it?
It's really very simplistic. Caesar, why did you choose to remain on the other side and not reincarnate?
Good question. Caesar, do you care to address that?
Hello?
But Richard, you're on mute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're back now.
Sorry,
Greg.
I'm sorry.
Richard likes to mute himself every once in a while.
I didn't know that we were going to put Richard to sleep.
Well, I guess.
Let us continue. What Caesar is saying is, I spent from the time I crossed over in that lifetime to perhaps it is 7 or 8 years now of your time since Carolyn released me from the Bardo. So I spent all of that time in those circumstances. And so I am enjoying my freedom, as a soul to enjoy this existence. And I am taking the opportunity to bring my skills to contribute to what is happening upon your planet at this time. And I feel I can better be of service in this role. And it is my desire, as all of this moves forward, to return to the center of the cosmos, which is my right.
Bless you. I'm sorry that you were in irons for so long, because you contributed so much in your time.
Well, you might learn a lot of the story, Greg, if you read his book, Conversations with Caesar. There's a lot of really good stuff in there.
I will.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
And you're welcome, dear. And Lila from Hawaii is on line one. Hi, Lila.
Oh, hi. I have a question for Elvis. I've always wondered, since I was in love with him, let's say, when he was...
Lila, didn't hear you, dear. You have a question for Elvis, and what's the question?
My question is, was he Apollo?
Was he Apollo?
Yes.
Is that the question? Okay.
Yes.
Elvis, you have a fan here that wants to know if you were Apollo in a past lifetime. Richard?
I was not Apollo.
Well, there you go, Lila. That was short and sweet. Elvis says he was not Apollo.
The statue that people used to gather around of Apollo and say, look, it's Elvis. Very, very similar in looks.
Uh-huh. Well, I think there's probably a lot of souls that are similar in looks to one another, you know, physically. But anyway, Lila, thank you for your question. We appreciate it, and thank you, Elvis, for answering. So we have, folks, about 5 more minutes. If someone out there would like to get a question in, do call, or else we will go forward with our interview with Caesar and Elvis. We're going to give you a second. Call in. We'll probably only have time for one or two fast questions. So if you want to speak, now's the time to call in to BBS Radio. I'm going to direct a question to both my guests. And Caesar, if you had one thing that you could bring forth by way of advice to humanity, what would that be after living a life in a very exciting time, having the power that you have, being the kind of general that you were? I mean, your troops adored you, and the bravery that you brought forth was quite remarkable, the strategies. And so, I mean, the life that you led was quite dashing and exciting. And what would be the one thing, piece of advice that you would give to humanity now?
It would be a phrase that I know you are familiar with. And that phrase is, follow what you feel and trust your intuition.
Touché. Caesar knows that I have used that. So I gather from what you're saying is that on some intuitive level, you had advice that was different than what you actually put into practice. Am I on the right track?
Yes, that is part of the reason why I would give that advice. I overrode my intuitive sense in my desire for glory and power and wealth. And all of those things would have come to me without the sacrifices that I made of my mission. But I overrode those senses. And in your world today, it is even more challenging because so much effort is put in by those who would control humanity to isolate you from the right side of your brain. You are your education system, and so much that goes on in your life is specifically directed to focus you in the left side of the brain, which is away from where your intuitive skills, your spiritual skills, your true strengths as a soul lie. And so if you connect with your intuition, I have come to understand that it will guide you through life. You get taught to plan and to execute the plan, which is all a left brain process. But indeed, as you come forth into the world, you are given this intuitive guidance, which is active almost from the moment that you are born, and it will guide you all the way to the moment of your crossing over, and it will bring forth what you need. It will direct you in the paths you need to follow to bring forth all that you need and all that you have come to fulfill in your life.
Thank you, Caesar. And for those who might be interested in Caesar's story as he related it to me, all that information is on the website by the same name, conversationswithcaesar.com. And the story that Elvis gave me is in Chaos Before Creation, and we would suggest that people sign up on our website for all of our interesting news letters and blurbs about what's going on at the 2012countdown.com. Do I have that right, Richard? I think I did.
You do.
Oh, great. Now, we have maybe 1 minute. I don't know, Larry. Can you be quick?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, everybody. The question is for Elvis. Elvis, your impact on the music world and otherwise is unprecedented, I believe, and from what I know in this time and space. From your now perspective, some of the lyrics that you offered and the impact that it had on mankind here, if you were to incarnate again, was there some things that you would like to do over again or to change?
I think Elvis heard that. We have 1 minute. Elvis, can you give an answer in a minute?
What I would change would be to follow my mission a lot more than I did, to bring forth a lot more of the gospel aspects of my music, to be perhaps less popular than I was, but to be more true to what I came forth to do.
Beautiful, Elvis. Thank you, dear friend.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Carolyn.
And it's time for us to go. Join us next week. Bless you all. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Elvis.
Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you, guys, for coming.
Thank you, Caesar.